Thank you. 20 years, 20 minutes. Let me speed up, see how far I can go. All right, as you know that Austronesian languages have been widespread, okay, as shown in the map. And it is said that, as Professor Robert Bloss is here, in 1985, his paper saying that homeland of Austronesian languages may be in Taiwan. So let's see, let's visit Taiwan. Taiwan is a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multilingual society. There are so many languages, including Min, Hakka, and more than 16 officially recognized Austronesian languages. However, due to the Japanese-only policy and Mandarin-only policy, many of the local languages have been facing extinction, especially the Austronesian languages, what I'm going to call Formosan languages here to save time. Fortunately, okay, changes of the policies have been taking place. For example, in 1987, we had the lift of martial law, and in 2001, we started to teach of local languages in elementary schools. All right, here I'm going to show that two major governmental institutions in Taiwan have been taking care of the revitalization of these languages. The first one is Ministry of Education. In 1995, the institution started the first time to compile indigenous language textbooks in a more systematic and nationwide way. And the second major governmental institution is the Council of Indigenous Peoples. Okay, and this institution was founded in 1996. Since then, quite a few major programs have been in charge by this institution. For example, the first six-year cultural revitalization and development program starting in 1999 till 2004. Following this program, we had the first six-year language revitalization program between 2008 and 2013. Right now, we are having the second six-year language revitalization program ongoing. So basically, I'm going to talk about the revitalization taking place between 1995 and 2014. All right, the issues that will be included in this presentation are shown as follows. Development of indigenous language textbooks. Right, so basically the first issue they are dealing with textbooks development. All right. And before talking about the textbook compiling, I need to point out the standardization of the writing system. In the past, all the writing materials actually designed by priests or native speakers themselves by using romanization or Chinese phonetic symbols with some modification. And it is Professor Li who was appointed or invited to help design the writing system in 1991 by Ministry of Education. After the Council of Indigenous Peoples founded in 1996, okay, they took over this task. And therefore, two hearings were held in 2003 and 2005. And that's why in 2005, the Ministry of Education and Council of Indigenous Peoples co-claimed the writing system on December 15th. And that was the time we started to work harder on language textbooks compiling, okay? Yet, the writing system we had in 2005 still have some problems. Okay, the first one is inconsistent manifestation. For example, same sound may be represented by different letters. For example, voiceless lateral was represented by D letter in Amis language, while HL in Ganagana Vu and LH in Thao. The second problem under inconsistency was that same letter may represent different sounds. For example, letter E may represent mid front vowel in some languages, while schwa sound in others. The second problem we have with this writing system is that there is no promotion after the system was proclaimed by the two institutions. Therefore, some speakers or some textbook compilers still use their old writing system, and while most natives were not familiar with this writing system, and that was why, you know, many native speakers still cannot read materials that have been written so far. In terms of development of indigenous language textbooks, the period can be divided or categorized into four stages. The first stage I will put is the time before 1995. And that was the period of time that people, they compiled textbooks on their own, either by schools or by churches or by local governments or teachers themselves. Okay, these are some examples that I'll show. The second stage started in 1995, as I mentioned earlier, that was Ministry of Education. They started to compile the textbooks for elementary school students. Okay, so this is the period that the government started to compile textbooks. And during this period, we compiled textbooks for Ming, for Hakka, and for 11 indigenous languages. And during this period, we compiled four volumes for each language, and basically they were used for third graders till sixth graders in elementary school. Okay, and they were compiled by school teachers and local native speakers. And some comments on this second stage. One, incompetent compilers. Therefore, due to their lack of training of compiling textbooks, they could not compile or transcribe the materials correctly, and they could not compile the textbooks systematically either. Okay, what is worse at that time was that the persons or the people who were in charge of compiling each textbook actually could not stay in the school permanently. Therefore, the frequent change of the compilers result in the original ideas being unable to continue. All right. Now, moving on to the third stage, starting in 2002 till 2005. Learning from the second stage, okay, this time the government tried to appoint one institution, okay, actually a college, okay, to help compile the textbooks for the native speakers. Instead of focusing on each language, they focused on each dialect. All right. So instead of compiling textbooks for nine indigenous languages, this time they compiled textbooks for 42 dialects. That was huge work, all right? So for 14 indigenous languages, we have 42 dialects. And these textbooks were designed for elementary school students and junior high school students. It was a picture taken you know, during that time, all right? Some comments on this period of compiling textbooks. Basically, all the textbooks compiled at that time were based on a translation of a Chinese version. And that was why a lot of native speakers criticized the content of the materials here. Okay? And again, the compilers did not have any training before they started the work. Therefore, errors in transcribing the content and inappropriate organization of the content could not reflect different degrees of difficulty. So nine volumes for each dialect. Some people or some natives complain or criticize that almost they share the same difficulty. Degrees of difficulty, okay? and they could not reflect the advanced textbooks at that time. The last stage of compiling the textbooks took place in 2009 till the present. There's the task still going on, okay? And you, in this period, the textbooks were actually designed for learners of different language proficiency, right? And this time, we tried to compile four sets. Each set, we have three volumes. So totally, we have 12 volumes of textbooks for 42 dialects. Now, you may want to calculate how many textbooks we will have to do in these 4 years. All right. The four sets are actually composed of pronunciation set, and that's designed basically for preschool learners or for people who do not know any writing systems. We also have the conversation set, as I mentioned in the third stage, okay, that those books were designed for elementary school students and junior high. And the second set here actually were considered to be supplementary edition to these 9-volume textbooks, all right? And the third set intended to use to be used by the high school students and some adult learners, okay, reading set. The last one, which is also under development at this moment, cultural set. Try to design this for advanced learners. Again, some comments on this stage. Okay, still going on. Again, compilers have less training, if not no training, and no systematic organization. All right. Fortunately, all the indigenous language materials so far we have are now digitalized and available in the e-platform named Indigenous Language eGarden. In your handout, you may have the website address as well, so you probably would like to visit there, okay? And a couple of comments here. One, access for all the textbooks and related issue. So here you may want to see that in the first row, we have the textbook, sorry, they are written in Chinese, okay? I'll explain to you. The first one is designed, the green color, designed for junior high students relating to conversation or patterns. The second one, designed for senior high, okay, basically patterns oriented. The third one, singing songs for preschool learners, all right, and FB, as you know. The bottom one, I will show some slides later. The second issue, dealing with language teachers training, okay? And again, I would like to divide the period in the past 20 years into three stages, all right, of holding training camp. In 2002, right, we started the holding the training camps for these native speakers. And at this time, we only have one training camp. And basically, that was designed to help train language teachers to be available for language teaching in elementary school. Okay, so we started to train indigenous language teachers. Later on, we found that the training should not be just, you know, one single purpose, okay? It could be multifunctional. Therefore, in the second stage, between 2003 and 2007, we have various type training camps, try to train indigenous language material designers, dictionary compilers, cultural workers, and computer media workers in addition to language teachers training, okay? As for the third stage, right, 2008 till present, right, we started to have different levels of training camps, all right, the beginning levels and advanced levels. Beginning levels, we again designed for the purpose of training indigenous language teachers. While for the advanced training camps, after they took the first beginning training camp, they could start, they could take the advanced training camp. And this time, we designed this for Aboriginal language teachers, you know, to to get them back to have advanced training. And we have material designers, exam question designers, and translators to come back and get this advanced training. And in addition to these two, in order to help native speakers to get familiar with their writing system, we also have training camps for promoting orthographic system, right? And in addition to the first three training camps, okay, the Ministry of Education collaborating with the Council of Indigenous Language Peoples, okay, they held supplementary training camps between 2002 and 2012. This type of training camps actually were designed for people or for language teachers, okay, who were already teaching in school. They were called back to attend annual training camp, all right, in order to enhance their teaching ability. So in each year, okay, we have different training camps for different purposes. In 2002 and 2007, basically teaching demonstration, they share with each other. 2008 and 2009, okay, more methods were given to these people, all right? And so that they can share how to teach adults or how to teach elementary school students and even preschool students, all right? 2010, we focused on immersion approach, while 2011, silent way, and 2012. And then we stopped at this time, okay? We thought that the temporary function had got its purpose, so we stopped. Some comments. During all these training camps, only 36 hours of courses were provided, okay? And unfortunately, even though we really try hard to advocate that we should have formal training, formal education for the indigenous language teachers, we still have no formal four-year college training programs, okay? And we still have no well-designed and systematic in-service training programs for teachers. Yet, fortunately, the Ministry of Education had been started a new 20-credit curriculum design. And I really hope that when I return home, this curriculum is finalized, okay? The third issue deal with language promotion of language teaching, okay? So basically, we could have teaching in formal education institutions. And that started in 2001 till now. So these are some pictures taken. The problems with this formal education is that incompetent Aboriginal language teachers, since most of them actually do not receive the 4 years college education. Many of them actually just graduate from high school, okay? And they still mix students of different grades or even different tribes, unfortunately. Insufficient instruction time, and teaching at bedtime slots, early in the morning, noontime, or after school. Teaching in inappropriate places, sometimes in playground, basement, or library, okay? No space for locating self-created teaching aids. Exhausted teachers, because they have to travel between schools or even between different counties. And we had to compete with English teaching, right? And besides formal education institution, we do have Language Nest starting in 2001. Okay, these are some pictures showing to you. And they were taught at night or over the weekends. We have community colleges starting in 2002. Learners' irregular attendance and courses lacking continuation are the two major problems. We have mentoring ethnic language teaching in 2012. And we try to revise, improve this program currently, okay? And ethnic language babysitters, nannies, all right? Right now we have 380 nannies taking care of children between 1 to 2 year old, all right? We have ethnic language immersing immersion kindergartens. At this moment, okay, we just started and we have 22 kindergartens. And I would consider that this is probably more promising. Some comments: in the past, more stress on indigenous language learning and teaching in elementary school. Currently, we start to pay more attention to preschool learners and adults of endangered languages. I was shown that I need to stop here. So, 20 years revitalization, and I only cover 3 issues, okay? But anyway, I need to stop. Thank you. Even though I did not complete my presentation, the handout may give you some more ideas. And the following 3 issues actually are more important, and I really hope that in the next conference, 2017, I can have more results to share with you all. Any questions? Bob?
So I kind of react to this teaching in inappropriate places because it assumes that the only appropriate place for learning a language is in the classroom, and that's a very artificial study. That's why I never learned a foreign language when I was in school, because it was always in a classroom setting. I think being so-called inappropriate places on the playground are fine, in a rice field, you know, and in a weaving activity, something like that where you can actually absorb the cultural content along with the language, is much more appropriate than a classroom.
Well, can I reply now? Okay. The problem is other students are having exercise, making a lot of noise, and the teacher here has to yell. Therefore, their voice would be just like mine, so coarse, so, you know, magnetic, all right? And really hard to carry that type of teaching. It's unlike teaching in the tribes, okay? Teaching in the elementary school in the tribes, actually the teacher lead the students to the garden, to the, you know, wild. They collect materials, they get natural information directly. So what I mean by teaching in inappropriate places, basically in the cities, okay, while not, you know, the environment is not really good for these indigenous peoples, students, to learn their languages, okay? And what is worse is that students, okay, these indigenous students have to compromise with other Han people, Han students, because Han, including Han, Ming dialect, Ming language, or Hakka, still considered to be the major languages, all right, in comparison, relatively speaking. While these Formosan languages are really only 2% population. So most of them, as I mentioned earlier, are facing dying. And we really try hard to save these languages. And we do not have competent teachers, and many of them simply follow the textbooks. If the environment is not nice enough or good enough, and it's really hard to carry on the learning for these, you know, Aboriginal languages students. And that's why inappropriate in the sense that the environment is not really suitable, is not quiet enough, is not considered to be good place for learning anything. Right. Yes? And that's why, you know, in the past, actually in the first 6 year revitalization program, okay, we focused on students in school. And we realized that one period per week, 40 minutes, really not enough. Especially that the students have to come from different classes or even from different years, grades. And it's really hard for them to learn anything. sufficient materials for them, sufficient time, okay? Therefore, we started to advocate that language should start be learned at home, in the communities, all right? And we need, unfortunately, those young parents do not have the command of the languages. Therefore, we try to pay nannies, okay, grandmoms, grandfathers, part to help these kids to learn the language. And we also have that mentoring system, okay? We want the elder to teach. At this time, we plan to have two youngers who do not have the command of the language to learn the language directly from this mentor, okay? A master, so-called. And we really hope that in 1 year, we can produce, we can help train 24 learners, okay? They, and then from 24, we may have 72, all right? So that, you know, the number of speakers can be enlarged, you know, in multiple ways instead of just focusing on the formal education program. Okay. Yes.
So, where could people get these textbooks? Because, for example, many indigenous people, scholars in the cities, might also want to buy these textbooks. So, information is as well.
You will see how amazing it is. You know, it works in Taiwan. Okay, the Ministry of Education asked all the local government to count how many textbooks they need, and each local government will ask each school to count how many students, how many textbooks they have, and how many students they have and how many textbooks they need, so that they start to distributing the textbooks before school start. And another way to get the material is through the internet. And that's why we have all the textbooks, all the materials now digitalized. And they are available in internet. Even here, actually, I mean, I was afraid that I didn't have time, and that's why they are not, you know, using the internet system to show to you how to use it, because the sound system, sound files are included as well. Okay, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, different places may need to have different strategies, all right? Taiwan's situation is really different, I would say, because 16 languages, 42 dialects, that's really a huge work. It would be nice to start teaching or acquiring their own language at home. I would say that bottom up, it's a really wonderful or useful strategy. Nevertheless, it depends on the environment you have and also the money, the financial support you can get from the government. Right now, we have top down, we also have the bottom up. Okay, so it's kind of, you know, mixing at this moment. And that's why I say probably in the next conference, I will have better sharing with you to see, you know, which strategy may be better, or which strategy you may even not want to try yourself, okay? But to me, actually, I'm not the policy designer myself, okay? I'm not administrator at all. I simply, working as a linguist, working as a language educators, trying to help, trying to provide my service to the government, and trying to help train those indigenous peoples. Okay. Yes.
What's the interest of the government in the Guadalajara?
Interest?
Yeah. Why do they want
support? Why do they want? If these indigenous peoples do not have their own language, what's the difference between them and me and us, okay? They will be just like, you know, people, what should I say? They should have their own uniqueness, and they should have their, can I say pride, culture? Without language, I don't know where culture will be shown, revealed. Furthermore, as Professor Robert Blatt said, Taiwan is the homeland of Austronesian languages. If all these languages die, where will the other Austronesian peoples go to find their root, if I can say this? Okay, so as a linguist, I would consider that that's part of our responsibility to help people to learn or to realize how important it is to learn their language. And it is also very important for each government to know that it's also their responsibility to help those minority peoples to save their language, to promote their language, and to teach these people to learn, to preserve their languages.
Thank you. That is all the time for us. So please join me in thanking William.
Thank you. Thank you for your coming. And thank you for your questions.